Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Even.
Here's John Williams.
When I'm away. Hey, but I'm back. This is John. We're in the Skyline Studio overlooking not such a pretty view of Chicago. Still a good city. I take Chicago on a cloudy day. We're here till 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. Don't miss our Mincing Rascals podcast. It's available on Spotify, too, you know. It's called the Mincing Rascals. You can also tell your smart speaker. Play the Mincing Rascals podcast, and there the latest episode will be. Bad news about the Dow. Don't like seeing the market start in my show anyway, that far off. Maybe it'll get better as the close goes on. And also maybe the hurricane won't be as devastating as a Category 5 makes it sound. Bahamas getting more than roughed up. But I called a friend of mine who lives in Florida, who lives in Miami. He's a TV videographer there. And I asked John what it was like for him and his family, and he said it's been sunny and pleasant. He had a nice weekend. He wasn't oblivious to it, of course. He said, I'm really sorry about the devastation the Bahamas are suffering. They're just getting cranked on. And then further up the coast, it's been bad. But isn't it interesting that you'd think somebody in Miami would be living with some ill effects of this, but they're on the better side, and it hasn't been bad for him at all. President got into a Twitter spat about that, of course, and we'll talk a little bit later on about the use of Twitter. I was surprised, too, that Lori Lightfoot on Twitter this weekend was engaged the way she was. I don't know what your thought about that is, but it did make me want to go back to some statistics we've quoted on this show. I don't know what we're going to do about gun violence and shootings in Chicago. I do not know how to fix that. I don't know if we need more guns or less guns. Personally, I'm a less guns guy. Seems like a lot of guns isn't getting the job done. But I don't know. Maybe we all need to arm ourselves and take classes and violent crime will go down. I literally don't know. I'm not even interested in the solution to that today. But I was a little surprised that Lori Lightfoot engaged the way she did. And it just brings to mind this point. Where is Chicago in the continuum of violent cities? I mean, that's one thing that I can get my head around and think that maybe information will at least help. If nothing, it's not going to make the problem go away, but I'd like people to know where Chicago is in terms of violent cities in America and violent cities in the world. We talked, gosh, a year ago or so, because this information is a little dated now, but you'll get the idea. This is from, I think, 2016. So it's a few years old, and obviously the murder rate in Chicago tends to fluctuate a little bit. It's always too high. But when you look at the murder rate in American cities, it's not even close. The deadliest city in America is New Orleans. 47 is the operative number. 47 people killed per 100,000.
What year did you say this is from?
I think this is, I'm turning a page on this, Lauren. I think it is 2016.
I was going to say, I'm guessing it's kind of like traffic accident reports, as usually you only really get the year before.
Right, so maybe that's after. Even dated, yeah. Right, and in fact, they reference it here as, I'm looking at it here, when was this written? 2016. So say these numbers are 2015 numbers. I think my guess is that if it's off for Chicago, if it's changed a little bit, it's probably also changed for the other cities.
Yeah, but your point being that it's not going to fluctuate so much that you could assume that it's pretty similar.
And if it is, the murder rate in New Orleans is three times higher than it is in Chicago. Chicago, 16 murders. In New Orleans, 48 murders. Exactly
so
three times.
Is the difference gun violence or... is there even a difference? They just aren't being mentioned like we are.
That's a good question. I mean, obviously, it's a blue city. It's a blue city. It's not a blue state. It is a blue state, but you know, you go south of I-80, it's a red state. But Illinois always votes with the Democrats, and the president, when he was on the campaign trail, I think that's why this came out in 2016 with 2015 numbers, the president was always running down Chicago. Barack and Hillary are from the Chicago area, too. So it seems like we've been a favorite whipping boy of the president. So that made me want to look up and see where do we rank.
Well, it's also the fact that we're a much bigger city, so the gross numbers are much higher.
The gross numbers are higher. That's why I think if you said murder capital of America, you could say that. It's also the people capital of America. We also have the most kindness in America because we just got more people. The rate is what matters, and New Orleans is the most dangerous place, three times more murderous than Chicago. Number two, Detroit. Number three, and it's right up there. These are the three cities that are off the charts. All of them 43, 45, and 47 murders per 100,000 residents. The third most murderous city in America is St. Louis. Then Baltimore. Then Oakland. Then Kansas City, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Memphis, Buffalo, Washington, D.C., Stockton, Miami, Milwaukee. More murderous than Chicago. So the big metropolitan areas to our north and south are more murderous than Chicago.
That's actually very shocking.
Milwaukee is 17. We're 16 and a half. Whatever.
Wow.
But they are every bit as dangerous as we are. After Milwaukee, it's Pittsburgh, then Chicago, and then Indianapolis, and then Tulsa. That doesn't make the problems go away. And if you're on the west or south side, of course, the numbers are exponentially higher. If you do live in Englewood, then your chances of getting murdered are higher than 16 for every 100,000. I mean, what a shame a child growing up in that neighborhood done nothing wrong and bullets are whizzing past. But if you want to get into a fight about what the most dangerous cities in America are, I think that's interesting to know. Then I looked up most dangerous cities in the world. The most dangerous city in the world, let me turn the page, and of the top 50, three of them are in the United States. But it's Tijuana, Mexico, then Acapulco, Mexico, and Caracas, Venezuela, and then cities in Mexico, 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 Venezuela, Brazil, Brazil, Venezuela, South Africa, Cape Town, number 11. Brazil, Mexico, Brazil. United States is represented at number 15. Murder rate in the world, and that's good old St. Louis, which is more murderous than a bunch of places you've heard of that you probably are afraid of in Mexico and Brazil and Jamaica. Baltimore is number 23. San Salvador, El Salvador, is safer per capita than Baltimore. And for that matter, St. Louis. And then it goes on with South and Central American countries. You don't find any in Europe. You don't find any in Asia. Australia's not here. Canada's not here. It's South and Central America. Starting at number 33, it's Honduras, Mexico, cities in Brazil, Mexico, Brazil, Brazil, Honduras, Puerto Rico. And on it goes like that. South Africa, Nelson Mandela Bay, that's Port Elizabeth, is number 45. So South Africa makes two appearances. Detroit is 46, New Orleans 50. Most murderous cities in the world. And then just one other list. So I looked it up more recently to see what Wikipedia was saying. And it's kind of like I just mentioned. Murder and non-negligent manslaughter. I guess that's kind of the same thing, but they're different charges. And the murder rates are highest in St. Louis, Baltimore, and on it goes. Baton Rouge, Kansas City, Cleveland, Memphis, Newark, Chicago, and the Wikipedia listing comes up at number 10. Washington, D.C., you afraid to go there? Is about number 20 on the list. So what to make of all of that? I don't know. I just think it's important to know when you're going to talk about where is it dangerous in America and what are we going to do about it, let's figure that out. But let's not make Chicago the whipping post of this issue, because it's not.
And the other thing about, are you going to talk still about the tweet, the little Twitter squabble?
Which gets me to the Ted Cruz, Lori Lightfoot thing. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, what that was about was Ted Cruz, and I'll just read the tweet. Gun control doesn't work. Look at Chicago. Disarming law-abiding citizens isn't the answer. Stopping violent criminals and prosecuting and getting more off the street before they commit more violent crimes is the most effective way to reduce murder rates. Let's protect our citizens. And so Lightfoot wrote back that, I mean, that's not the point, what Cruz is writing about. Lightfoot responded essentially saying 6 in 10 guns used in murders in Chicago or in Illinois, I don't remember,
yeah,
come from out of state. And that's what was her. So he was arguing, was Chicago's got tough gun control laws and look, they don't work. She's responding, no, the murders are being committed by guns being purchased in places where the gun control laws are lighter, like by Indiana.
State. Yeah, by state. It's the state listing. Illinois, 40% of the firearms recovered are from Illinois.
And then she said, get our name out of your mouth.
Right, which everybody's kind of chuckling at, but it's the other tweet that I would have advised against. Lori Lightfoot said 60% of illegal firearms recovered in Chicago come from outside Illinois, mostly from states dominated by coward Republicans like you. Nobody's going to hear what your point is, Lori. As soon as you do that, your point is completely lost because now you're in a Twitter spat and you're calling him a coward. And that's the operative word in this tweet. That is a mistake. That is a mistake. And maybe that plays, I don't know, maybe that plays well in Chicago. We like that she's calling him a name. But if you really are interested in some sort of national discourse, and she does seem to be, you get into a Twitter spat, name calling, then that's all you're doing. You're not doing anything constructive.
She did it also a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember what the exact issue was.
That's what I'm thinking of, and I don't remember what it was, but we had a conversation similar.
It was over immigration and the ICE raids, I think.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what she said. Yeah, I'll take your point there. I understand what you're saying, but I also think, you know, it's very hard for us in Chicago to try to right the record with those numbers that you just gave because it sounds like we're diminishing the problem, right?
Yep.
So that's a very difficult thing to do.
Yep.
And this has been a very frequent sort of target. Oh, gun control laws don't work. Look at Chicago. So I'm glad she's standing up for that.
I mean, I don't see a Texas city in these lists, do I? Detroit, St. Louis, Baltimore, Kansas City. It's more the industrial belt and out east. You know, where there are large urban areas, that's where it is. But I don't see Houston here. I don't see Dallas. I'm sure it's in there somewhere. What's my point about that? I guess that it'd be wise to figure out the where of this and the why of this. And then, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, Steve, if you could prove to me that arming all of the citizens would make the citizens safer and the numbers go down, I'd be 100% behind it. Why wouldn't you be, right? You don't care that people have guns. You care that people shoot people with the guns. If somehow everybody being armed made the murder rate or the violence rate go down, I don't care if you've got a Shetland pony in your backyard. Let's do whatever it takes. Now, I'm not suggesting a Shetland pony is the solution. I'm just saying I don't care what the means is. It's the end that we should care about, and I don't know how to get there. Don't know how to get there. But New Orleans, 48. Chicago, 16. One-third as likely to be the victim of a violent crime in Chicago than you are if you're on vacation in Louisiana. It's 1:20. Ella said you got to take a break. You have a comment about that? This is WGN. Bob's on WGN Radio. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Quickly, on the murder rate in Chicago, if your newsroom got a report that five U.S. soldiers were killed and 40 were wounded, it might be a headline on your news. That's what affects Chicago. It's the amount that happens over these weekends and the way it's reported nationally. I don't really care about the per 1,000 or per 1,000,000.
You should. You should. Well, that matters.
I understand it matters. And whether we're the 105th or the 5th, in talking to certain police officers from Chicago, they would like to see more of these people really arrested. And it wouldn't solve the problem, but it might help if more of these people were put in jail. And that's really about it. I mean, if you listen to the national news, Chicago's the worst. Every time we have one of these weekends.
And you and I know it's not. And you and I know that's not true. You and I know it's terrible. Listen, if you live in the South or West Side, then these numbers are probably like Tijuana. It's astronomical. It's so many things. A shame is certainly one of them. But Chicago's a safe city. Chicago is a very safe city. Especially if you don't go to the South and West Side. And if you're coming from Peoria or Pittsburgh to our city, you probably won't. We got to fix the South and West Side. But if I was talking about the image of this city or the safety of this city, Chicago's a very safe place to go. You agree with me on that, right, Bob?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Yeah. So that was just my comment, that when you hear these huge numbers on a weekend, it gets people's attention.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm mad at you now, Bob. I'm yelling at you, and you seem to be a nice guy.
I'm cleaning my gun. I got to go.
He's probably telling the truth. Joe, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. There's no easy answers to the problems. However, they are systemic in some of the cities throughout the United States. But Henry Louis Gates, I don't know if you ever heard of him, he's a black professor that graduated at Harvard, and he has on his website that 75% of African Americans, 50% of Hispanics, 25% of whites, and 5% of Asians are born out of wedlock today. So there's no responsibility on the part of the fathers. And number two, let me say this. We have a problem in our country, a mental health problem.
Yeah.
It's not a gun problem. It's a mental health problem. I spent 25 years teaching students with mental conditions. And if you don't take your medicine and you don't seek counseling, you're going to have a problem. And most of these shootings are involved with people who have mental conditions.
And let me just say this, though. Most of the mass shootings in recent years have involved AR-15s, right? So we cannot get rid of mental illness, but we can get rid of a particular gun that's used over and over in mass shootings.
Thanks for the phone call. I suppose we have a problem with each. I've been a little immersed in the mental health issue and the need for resources for people lately. I won't go into the details, but boy, we can't spend too much money on that. Here's the number that also jumped out at me in the Chicago Tribune story by Mitch Dudek. Lori Lightfoot has weathered two other bloody holiday weekends in the first few months on the job. Over the long 4th of July holiday weekend, 68 people were shot, 5 of them fatally. And for Memorial Day weekend, 41 were shot, 7 fatally. The story says that the slain males this weekend were all in the age range of 15 to 42. They were all males, and they were from Austin, Humboldt Park, Inglewood, Woodlawn, Archer Heights in South Chicago, neighborhoods that I would say are 90%+ African-American. So what you have is all of the victims here were men between 15 and 42 living in predominantly black neighborhoods. Okay, we'll pause here. It's 129. This is WGN. Have you seen what's going on with interest rates? There was a story that was banner on CNN on Wednesday, and it said that the 30-year rate was below 2. Below 2, he said. I wanted to ask David Hochberg a couple of questions about that. If you are renting, is this the time to do something? If you are in a mortgage, is this the time to refinance? I'm intrigued by how you calculate those numbers. We'll also play for you the opening questions by Zach Galifianakis to some famous people. Between Two Ferns is going to be a movie?
You should leave out the apostrophe when you're typing. You don't need to type the apostrophe. It'll put that in for you.
Just really?
Plow on through the word, and it will correct it for you.
I don't like that either. This is the dawning of the age. We should have that guy back on. He was an expert on hacks and your social media, on your phone, when you're typing, stuff like that. I couldn't believe the things you all knew that I didn't. You may not be surprised by that fact, but I was shocked. 1:38, this is WGN, John Williams in the Skyline Studio. David Hochberg, the financial mortgage guru that you hear do commercials and guest occasionally on this show, is in our studio. Hi, David.
Hi, John.
I wanted to play my Zach Galifianakis cuts.
Go ahead.
You know, Between Two Ferns, the talk show?
Very funny guy.
It is a funny show.
He is hysterical.
It's a funny comedy or die thing. What's that channel called? It's Funny or Die. It's a funny or die bit, but I think it works in about 3 or 5 or 7 minute snapshots. They're making it a whole movie.
Really?
The scene is he's interviewing Matthew McConaughey. There's a flood. McConaughey dies. They bring him back to life. Wackiness ensues.
Cool.
Maybe it'll be really funny. It comes out in September.
Can't wait.
Or it goes up in September. It'll be on Netflix. But I'm worried about the movie, particularly since It's so good in such short bites. You hate to see them ruin this thing.
Blow it up, yeah.
This is him talking. Here's his first question to Matthew McConaughey in the movie.
Of all the things you can win an Oscar for, how surprised are you that you won one for acting?
Here we go.
That's good.
That's good. That's good.
Here he is. Here's his follow-up question to Matthew McConaughey.
I noticed that you're wearing a shirt. Is everything okay?
And he's deadpan serious.
That's I know.
That's awesome.
And I think the mistake they make, it's the mistake that Barack Obama made, and Hillary didn't, but it was don't try and spar with him.
No.
Just sit there and look uncomfortable.
Just roll.
Like Justin Bieber. I don't know if Bieber's people completely briefed him on what this bit was, but Bieber's thing was so uncomfortable.
I just have never interviewed a seven-year-old before. So. What was the last toy you got in a Happy Meal?
I don't think I've ever ordered a Happy Meal.
So that's him to Justin Bieber. And Bieber was just like looking down at his shoes. He didn't want to be there.
He's great, though. I mean, that's the whole purpose of that stupid skit is because it's so ridiculously out there. That's what makes it so funny.
There's two ferns on the set.
It's two chairs.
And two chairs, so it's between two ferns.
That's it.
And he's chumming up. Well, he actually tends to despise all of his guests or doesn't know anything about them. Here he is trying to interview Benedict Cumberpatch.
Benedict Benefit Lumberjacks.
Benedict Cumberpatch.
That's what it is.
Here he is talking to John Hamm.
Bradley Cooper co-wrote, directed, and starred in A Star Is Born.
I hear it's great.
Are you hoping that will open doors for other hot idiots?
Now, so the John Hamm one is in the movie. Cumberpatch is in the movie. The McConaughey stuff is in the movie. Here he is when Barack Obama was running, I think, for re-election. This is him with Obama. Oh, you don't see it, Elif? Okay, I'm sorry. I thought it was in there. You did the Bieber one. Do you have Hillary Clinton? Because on my rundown, I have those. Here he is talking to Hillary Clinton.
Are you excited to be the first girl president?
Well, I mean, being president would be such an extraordinary honor and responsibility. But being the first woman elected president and what that would mean for our country and particularly what that would mean for, you know, not just little girls, little boys, too, that's pretty special.
Mm-hmm. Not to take away from the historic significance of you perhaps becoming the first female president, but for a younger generation, you will also become their first white president. And that's pretty neat, too. As secretary, how many words per minute could you type?
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, how many words could you type?
That's awesome. See, that's my humor, though, right? I could sit there for 3 hours and watch that stupidity.
That works for you. Yeah.
That's good.
Well, that works for me in 5-second snippets. report back to me at the end of the month.
Okay.
And let me know what you thought of the Netflix release of the Between Two Ferns Zach Galifianakis film. David, that's not why I called you in here today.
No? Not to review comedy skits or anything, comedy movies?
So what's a 30-year fix right now?
It's going to start with a 3 if you have good credit and you're not looking to take money out of your house. If just looking to do a rate and term refinance and you have good credit, it's going to probably start with a 3 and your loan-to-value is low enough.
If you are renting, is this like, if you ever thought of getting, I've had people explain to me renting is a smart option for people,
sure,
as opposed to home ownership. And that flies in the face of everything I thought I always learned. You know, renting is money you never get back. Mortgages are equity that you get to keep. And,
yeah.
And you use other people's money and it grows.
Sure, if it grows. if your home appreciates and you sell it at the right time. If you bought in 2002 and sold in 2008, it didn't really work out too well for you.
And that's what worries me about if the money is so inexpensive, maybe the market isn't going to appreciate then. Maybe, yeah, I can buy a house now, but who's going to want to buy my house when I want to sell because the interest rates are going down maybe because the economy isn't going to be so good.
Correct.
So maybe this is not a good time to get into a mortgage.
Well, here, it's a good time to get into a mortgage if you and your family or if it's you solo feel it's a good time to own a house or a condo. And your home would sell quickly because it's King John's condo, and who wouldn't want to buy that? And I would just say...
It
comes with the ping pong table and great new windows. But what I would say is, is if you are looking to buy a home, now's a perfect time to buy a home. If you have a great job, good down payment, or solid assets, a good reserve account in case of emergency, and you have a solid job and you have good credit, you get into a house now. Some people want to have home ownership, John. Some people don't. That's why 60-some percent of people out there, of your listeners, own a home, and 30-some percent rent a home or live in their parents' basement. Nothing wrong with any of those situations or scenarios. It just what fits your shoe and what's best for your financial situation.
Yeah, but a lot of us had mortgages in our lifetimes that were double digits or almost.
Sure.
And you just think you're missing a golden opportunity. Mortgage rates won't go to zero. We're about there. So if you were ever going to buy a house,
now's a good time.
Do you agree with that?
I agree. If the fundamentals are there, if you have a good job,
yeah,
decent credit.
You're throwing those things up like roadblocks.
I'm throwing those things up as qualifiers, right? I mean, if you don't, back in the day, crazy things were happening. People without jobs were getting mortgages. That's gone. All that stuff is gone. We need W-2s, tax returns, pay stubs. A lot more qualification are going into people buying homes right now. So the Wild West days from 2000, when I got into it, through 2007, and all the craziness stopped, are gone. It's never going to come back.
What's the loan-to-value ratio these days?
Loan-to-value, if you're a veteran, you get in with zero down, no money down.
They were doing 105% loans once upon a time.
They were doing 125% loans when I got in the industry in August of 2000. I never quite understood that.
Really? So give me an example of that.
Your place is worth $100,000.
Yeah, right.
And they would lend you $125,000. I mean, it's that simple, right?
And their philosophy, if it wasn't corrupt, was that when you go to sell, it'll be worth more than $125,000.
Values will continue to always go up, which we've learned is a fallacy. And it's just like the stock market, right? We've had a good run, and now we're hitting some turbulence there. So, listen, you got to pick a good time. I've invested money for my kids' college education, okay? I've got a junior and a freshman. It's been a good run for the past 16 years for my oldest and the past 14 years for my middle girl, okay? And I told my financial planner, hey, it's been a good run. Pull it out. I want to go into bonds. I want security because my girls are going to be going to college, God willing, in the next 2 to 4 years, right? So I want the safety of that money. I don't want it in the stock market because we've had a heck of a run while they've been alive with a good run. All right, we had a little blip in 07, 08, but we had a great past 10 years.
We've had a great run since 2016.
Yeah, it's been great. So
the last 3 years have been good.
Thank you. I'm happy with what the return that we've had. My
wife
and I.
Yeah, but that's because you're going to use that money in the next. That's short term spending,
sure,
essentially.
Sure.
But if you were going to, I mean, because the financial advisors I've been talking to say, even now you should continue to, if you can, just
dollar cost average. Absolutely.
Just keep putting the money in. If it goes down, you're getting more of it.
100%.
Unless you need it next year, then it's a completely different
answer. Feeding into it. You can't time it. But it's a housing challenge, right? If you're renting, I talked to a buddy of mine, okay? He just sold his house for 500 G's downtown. He just sold it. Cleared, condo, walked away. All right, he's in his late 50s, early 60s. He doesn't know where he wants to be. He might stay here. He might go down to Florida. He might go to Arizona, wherever he's going to go. He's like, you know what? Wife and I decided we're going to rent for 2 years because I don't want to have to buy it, pay all the taxes, go in and out with the transfer tax. I just want to rent. I'm like, he's like, you know, we're going to rent the 2-bedroom with the 2-car garage. He's like, I'm like, how much? He's like, yes. I'm like, $3,500. He's like, $3,650. So when you start figuring out a 2-bedroom condo with 2 parking spaces downtown Chicago is $3,650, it makes sense sometimes.
That sounds cheap to you?
No, it sounds comparable to what a mortgage would be with the real estate taxes and the assessments and everything else. You know, a monthly payment on a $200,000-$300,000 condo is going to be about that. You know, a $400,000 condo would be similar depending upon what the taxes and the assessments are.
But rates have been relatively low for a while now.
Yeah, but listen, they shot up at the end of last year. If you were going to tell me in December, we were quoting people 5% or high fours, low fives, that we'd be down in the high threes, mid threes in July, August, September of this year, I'd tell you you're out of your mind. I would have bet against it, right? I didn't think we were going to be down
to what?
This low.
To 3 what?
It's going to start with a 3 today. Listen, if you've got great credit and you have, if you have great credit, a low loan to value, and you're escrowing your taxes, Okay, you could. It's going to be 3.625 to 3.8
on a 30-year fix.
On a 30-year fix,
with no points.
With no points.
Why do you care about escrowing taxes?
Because the banks penalize people an eighth of a point if you don't escrow your taxes.
Why? They're worried you're not going to have the money.
Well, here are two things. They're worried that you're not going to have your money, and they don't have to worry about making real estate taxes. Plus, they're playing with the float of a couple of billion dollars.
Oh, that's what it is. It's the float, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
sure.
If you're giving them the money as you go, that's
right. They've
better.
Got a couple of billion dollars sitting in an escrow account in 50 states of hundreds of thousands of people.
But still, I want to go back to my point about, all right, so if the last 3, 4, 5 years, I could have still gotten a mortgage at below 5, maybe
yeah.
4 something.
Low 4s.
Maybe even high 3s. When did I get mine? My number's around 4, maybe even a little less.
I
had that for a little while.
Yeah, we did it.
Well, then why would this news about the mortgage rates going down shouldn't impress me, because I'm not going to make up the closing costs with the savings that I'm going to get from a lower mortgage.
Well, you got to slow your roll there, radio boy, because the mortgage guy over here is going to tell you why. I just talked to a guy this morning, great credit, 73% loan-to-value, a little higher on the loan-to-value, 780 credit
wait,
score.
Slow down. I'm making notes here.
Okay. What? He has like a 200, I think he has like a $250,000 mortgage, $300-some-thousand home value. Okay. We put him in the loan 3 years ago. His rate is like 4.125% on a 30-year fixed loan. Okay.
That sounds pretty good.
It's pretty good. So he called me up. We're refinancing his son and refinancing his sister. We put him into a 25-year fixed loan today. He does not want to escrow his taxes. Okay? He does not want to escrow his taxes, which is an eighth of a point. He wants us to give him a full closing cost credit. So I quoted him. I said, listen, you could either do 3.625 or 3.75 with his scenario if you wanted to roll the $2,300, $2,400 into the loan. Or I could put you in at, I think it was 4.125 with the full closing cost credit. Or 4.124, something like that. It was like 3/8 of a point higher in the rate. His payment on the 25-year fixed loan is less than what he's paying on the 30-year.
Sure.
And he's cutting off 2 years off his current loan by making less of a payment. It's only like $9, $10. But essentially, he's paying the same thing. He's paying his home off 2 years faster. And we're giving him a full closing cost credit. So why wouldn't you do that? Forget about the rate. I don't want to, you know, all these people get hung up with the rate. I just talked to a guy I work out with, right? I see him 3 times a week.
You work out?
Yeah, I work out. It doesn't look like it, but underneath this fat, I'm cut, and I can lift a lot. I can't run that far, but I can lift things a short distance. Yeah, thanks for noticing. I appreciate that.
No, a little funny there.
It's all right. It's good. I'm seeing my shrink after I get off the air. It's fine. But long story short, he's like, well, I got a 30-year fix at 3.625. I'm like, okay, what's the principal and interest payment? He tells me. He's like, oh, by the way, I got a $30,000 second loan. It's costing me $375 a month. I said, great. How much credit card debt do you have? He's like, how do you know I have credit card debt? I go, everybody's got credit card debt. How much credit card debt you got? He's got about $35,000. Long story short, lumped it all together. We put him into a 4.125% loan. Took him at his 3.625. Paid off all of his debt, rolled everything together, full closing cost credit, saved him $1,100 a month. From the train over here, I was talking to his wife. She's like, well, we're going into a higher rate. I'm like, you're saving $1,100 a month. So I had to do the math with her. Here's what you're paying principal and interest on the first.
It's a higher rate on the house, but it's lower than it was on the car.
You're saving $1,100 a month.
That's the only number maybe
that's
that
all that matters.
I don't understand people that don't escrow their taxes. They want to keep the money. They're not going to do anything with that money in the 6 months that they don't have to pay it.
Here's why. A lot of people don't trust Cook County. Can't imagine why. Okay, because it's such a well-efficient run.
You think that's why people do that?
That's why I don't do it.
I never would give my money to escrow if I don't have to. Why?
Because what are you going to do? You got $500 or $1,000 a month more in your pocket that I guess you can spend, but you better save it. You're going to need it, and you're not going to get any interest on that money.
Well, you tell me, David, but when they collect escrow, they collect more than they're going to have to pay, right?
A couple of months extra to have a little bit of a buffer.
I love that. Then I get a little bit back at the end. I know that was stupid. Yeah,
It's not stupid. That, you know, that's too harsh of a word. It's naive. It's more like it.
Yeah, well.
Okay, but what's happening? The couple I'm saving $1,100 a month, they got a $1,200 escrow shortage because Cook County just dropped a 3G tax increase on them. Okay, so what happened? Their current lender paid the real estate taxes that were due August 1st. Then they get a little note in the mail. Oh, by the way, Mr. and Mrs. McGillicuddy, that's not their name for, you know, obvious reasons, but, you know, for radio, you owe us this. You could either write us a check for $1,500 that you're short, or we're going to increase your mortgage payment by $300 a month. right? These people are paying off like $40,000 worth of credit card debt. You think they got $1,500 laying around?
So that's why people escrow their taxes in Cook County.
Some people do. I don't. I don't want to give Cook County any more money than 650, you know, units of government. I don't understand that, right? So you know what? You send me the tax bill in September, I'll write you the check. You send me the tax bill in August, I'll go online and pay the check.
We seem to have strayed from the topic about interest rates now.
To Cook County.
So the interest rates are going down.
They're all down.
Do you think they're going to go any lower?
If I was that smart, I wouldn't be here. I'd be making daiquiris on a boat someplace where there's not a hurricane coming through right now.
That wasn't a bad question. I don't think they can go much lower than they are.
No, I get that all the time. I didn't think they were going to go any lower than they were last June. So we're taking folks out of 30-year fixed loans that we put them into 3 years ago in the low fours, and putting them into 25-year fixed loans, and their payments are staying the same or going down.
Where's the most precipitous drop? Because you always thought 30-year, and then maybe you buy points, maybe you don't.
Yeah.
And then does it drop off significantly at 25, 20,
no,
15?
Where is a bigger drop.
That's the number you want to shoot for if you can.
Yeah, the 30-year and the 25-year are essentially the same. But 20-year, you might save a quarter of a point, eighth of a point. Again, it depends on a bunch of different variables. When you get down to 15, you're saving 3/8 of a point to a half point. But your payment's going up substantially because you're amortizing it over a shorter period of time.
Is there any magic ratio between what your principal and your interest payments are? I just looked at ours, and we haven't been in our mortgage very long, but our interest is higher than our principal. Now, we pay down the principal further, but at least what's due, the interest is a lot more than the principal,
right,
which kind of breaks my little heart.
Yep.
What should I know or learn about that fact?
Just to know that in a 30-year fixed loan, the first 10 years, you're predominantly paying interest on it, and it starts changing. You start paying more around 10 to 15 years, and it starts accelerating around 20 years. And most people are out of their home in 7 to 10 years anyway, according to industry standards.
Yeah. So what does that mean then? What kind of
It means you don't worry about it, then you don't look at your mortgage payment, and you just send the payment in because you could afford the payment. You're fine.
Because you are always, if you only focused on one thing, it's how much money is coming out of your pocket.
It's about the payment.
Yeah.
I mean, here, the number 1 through 100.
I got 30 seconds.
It's about the payment. It's not about it's never been about the industry. I've been originating loans since August of 2000. I've stated since I got in this industry, it's not about the rate, it's about the monthly payment. Okay, I'm taking somebody for 3.625 on her first loan. The couple I was talking about walking from the train, they have a second loan with like $20,000 on a credit card debt, and I'm lumping it all together, putting them into a higher interest rate. We're saving $1,100.
Right. So I can understand why the husband or wife says, "Wait a minute, we went from a 3.6 to a 3.75. We're going the wrong direction here."
Right. Went from 3.625 to 4.125.
Well, there you go.
Right.
But the rate on that credit debt was probably 15%.
All that matters is, John, $1,100 less when we get done with the loan in 30 days will be $1,100 less a month, and they will be completely out of debt, and they'll be saving $1,100 a month. That's a lot of money.
His name is David Hochberg from Homeside Financial. This isn't a commercial, but if people wanted to find out more from you, where do they go?
Two places, 855-56-DAVID is our phone number, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or you could go to our website, 56, the number 5, the number 6, DAVID.com.
Thank you, Mr. Hochberg. Good to see you.
Thank you, John.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
But we do.
Here's John Williams.
In fact, I'd like to think that all of us here at WGN think big thoughts so you don't have to. And some of you think them on your own. We appreciate that. We get together and talk like this on the radio. Weekdays 1 to 3, Rokan, Anna DeVlantis after the 3 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. Remember, the Mincing Rascals is our award-winning podcast. And remember, too, that you can go to WGNRadio.com/Teddy. Go to WGNRadio.com/Teddy. To get information for or to order your tickets for our Teddy Roosevelt conversation. That's going to be October. I'm looking at you, Elif. October 12th at the Blizzard Theater at Elgin Community College. We'll do a 10:30 a.m. kickoff. I'll talk to President Roosevelt on stage. He will tell amazing stories. I don't care who the president is or was. When Roosevelt is on stage, you're always thinking, that's what we need. That's what I want. More of that. Honesty, integrity. A guy who fought the fight. A man who read the book, a man who, you know, not only talks the talk, but walked the walk. He's the real deal. It's a wonderful show. You'll enjoy our conversation with Teddy Roosevelt on stage, and you get to ask questions, too. Chicago Tribune has been doing a series that I didn't exactly think was a good idea. That's probably a good idea. 100 Greatest Bears Players Ever, because the Bears are the ones that are putting out the list. At least that's the way I understand it. This isn't the, you know, fans voting. It's the organization. Imagine if WGN Radio said, here's the greatest WGN Radio news, sports, traffic, weather, producer, announcers of all time. We have a Hall of Fame, and some of us get in there, but we didn't say Bob Collins is the best or Steve Bertrand is the best. But the Bears are doing that.
Well, we didn't, but I have.
Trust me, we all have those feelings. So Nagurski they have at number three today, and Gale Sayers at number four. I want to talk about Gale Sayers. Where's Walter Payton? Walter Payton is probably going to be number one or two, would you say? Who are the remaining two?
Yeah, it'll be one.
Who's missing here?
So this
Butkus is not on here yet, so it's going to come down to those two.
So the Bears did their own list, and this is the Chicago Tribune doing a separate one.
Oh, this is
so the Bears have Walter Payton, Dick Butkus, Bronco Nagurski, Sid Luckman, and Gale Sayers rounding out the top five.
Ah, okay. Well, I guess that point is still made. I'm not sure if it's interesting to me that the organization would do that, but this is the Tribune's list, huh? And it's very similar because they've got Nagurski 3, Sayers 4, Luckman 5, Bill George, etc. Missing from 1 and 2 would be Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus.
Well, it'll be Walter Payton 1 and Dick Butkus 2.
Pardon me, yeah. I'm looking at Gale Sayers at 4, but Bronco Nagurski 3, and then Walter Payton and Butkus. By the way, the story about Nagurski is funny in here. I guess he played at the University of Minnesota. Here's what they write. One day, Clarence Doc Spears, the football coach at the University of Minnesota, was on a summer recruiting trip 300 miles north of his Minneapolis campus. As he drove along country roads, he stopped to ask a farm boy for directions. Bronco Nagurski, pushing a plow without a horse, showed Spears where he needed to go. He did so by picking up his equipment with his right hand and using it as a pointer. Bronk does not tell the story himself, George Hallis wrote, but he doesn't deny it either. Spears forgot about the boy he was in town to see, and Nagurski was on his way to football stardom. They say when he hit you, he changed your life. Even at the ankles, it felt like an electric shock. Bronco Nagurski, number three. How did the statue look? How did the statues look today?
I thought they were great. Yeah, I really do. I think they're perfectly positioned. It's those steps leading up to Gate Zero, which is the south entrance of Soldier Field. And it's normally a large gathering spot before games. I think a lot of people kind of meet up there and take pictures and all those sorts of things. I can tell you that's probably going to be one of the most during the season. I mean, you'll see Instagramming and all that sort of thing. But I thought they did a great job. And we were talking to George McCaskey after, and he said, well, I was just kind of getting a good read on it from Jared Payton because he's been really into the whole thing, and Jared absolutely loved it. It was cool to see their whole family there taking pictures together and whatnot.
It's a funny thing because, like, the Michael Jordan statue is awesome.
Yeah.
The Harry Carey one is not good. I don't think the Jack Brickhouse one does him justice. And the Harry Carey one's kind of creepy. The Jordan one is great. The Ernie Banks one is really good.
The Makita and Hall ones, I think, are great.
I know it, but it's a funny thing when you cast somebody, what will the shape or image be? Will you put the fans in the background, which haunts the Harry Carey one? So it's just kind of a weird sort of thing to get that right. I'm glad to hear you think they did a good job of it.
I think they did a very good job. And Jared Payton and Connie Payton, the whole family, was involved with the process. They met with the artist, and they actually went down to, I believe he was in Pennsylvania, but they had flown down a couple times to meet with him because he had clay moldings and things like that before he actually started the process of building these bronze thousands and thousands of pounds structures. So Jared and the family were very much involved with it.
Dave Ennett's our sports director. Dave, do you agree with me that statues can be funny things? They can perfectly remember, you know, remind you of who that person was, and sometimes they can kind of throw you off a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree, John. But I think most of the statues around town, I think, have been done very well. You go out in the bleachers at Guaranteed Rate Field, and they have some of the statues out there. I think back to the dedication of the Ron Santo statue at Wrigley Field that I just happened to see it the other day, and it's still That I think really captured Ronnie. Yeah. But I agree with Kevin. I did not see these in person today, but I saw the television coverage on WGN TV, and I've seen some other images of the statues, and I think these really did kind of capture the essence of both George Halas and Walter Payton.
Yeah, I think the Halas one was fairly easy to predict what he would be doing. You know, it looks like he's coaching on the sideline. Where Walter Payton, you got a whole lot of options there. What sort of position do you have him in, running the ball?
What do they have him in? What is he doing?
It's his signature move, Dave. You can probably explain it better than I, where he would sort of do that kind of half step, kind of set up a defender. But I think if you go back and look at his highlights, you'll see plenty of times where he does this move where he's got the ball, he's holding it like a grapefruit, as somebody explained, his one-handed holding of the football, and him kind of doing this half kick step thing that he would utilize to set up defenders.
Which, by the way he held the ball was something that people were always trying to get him to change. And, of course, he didn't need to change it, and he didn't want to change it. And didn't really have a problem either hanging on to the football, as we found out, because the guy had so much strength.
Probably the only guy that could get away with carrying a football like that. Because if you play football at an early age and your coach saw you doing that, you were running laps or doing push-ups or something.
All right, Dave Ennett, Walter Payton story, go.
Walter Payton story, go. You know, the run that I think everybody remembers, I was at Soldier Field the day it happened. It was against the Kansas City Chiefs in 1977. What people forget is that the Bears won that game on a last-minute touchdown pass from Bob Avellini to Greg Latta. But what everyone remembers from the game is the run by Walter Payton. And for a guy who ran for more yards than anyone had run for in NFL history to that point, it was an 18-yard run that is sort of his signature run. And he didn't score a touchdown on it, but I think he broke four, five, six tackles, started right, had a block from Reeve Story, then came back left, and starts banging off guys in the middle of the line and just keeps his legs moving. And I think that kind of summed up what kind of a player he was. And, you know, Mike Ditka used the term today, talked about his heart, and I think that's what that run showed more than anything.
I watched that video a couple of times today. Sometimes when they say a guy broke a tackle, it's, you know, a guy leaped at him and got a hand on. These were legitimate, full-on efforts by NFL studs, and they just bounced off him. It was amazing. It was just amazing.
It's remarkable, and I was thinking about this and watching Jarrett this morning, and to think that for a stretch there in the middle 80s, Chicago boasted two guys, Walter Payton and Michael Jordan. I mean, the preeminent figures, really. I don't know if league-wide people thought of Walter Payton the way we did in Chicago, because there were so many great stars in the NFL in that era. But I think today, I think people appreciate what he meant to the league. But think about that those two guys were playing in this town at the same time.
How lucky were we? When I think about Walter Payton, the thing that first comes to mind is after a crushing hit that he'd deliver to somebody who was hitting him looked like just as hard. And you think these guys are never getting up. And Payton would pop up. He did a back handspring one time after a thing that you thought would have been a season ender. And he does a back handspring to get up after the thing. And I'm like, how is that humanly possible?
Well, we were talking earlier, John. Obviously, I didn't have a chance to see him play live, but I've watched just about every highlight you can possibly find on YouTube and the internet. And the thing that always stuck out to me as a kid when I would see these highlights, how it was just so unbelievable to see a running back just completely jumping over the offensive line. Yeah. He would just jump over the entire line and into the end zone. And since that, I've never seen a running back do it once, let alone the amount of times he did throughout his career. It's unbelievable to see him do that.
You know, there was that play that for years when CBS on the old NFL Today, it was the play they showed at the beginning of the show every week. It was great shot by NFL Films, and it's that play, Kev, where he goes airborne and literally flies into the end zone. I mean, really,
it's wild.
Was something you just don't see.
And nobody's been able to replicate that. Yeah.
My mom called those flyovers. Whenever the Bears would have it inside the 20, literally, she goes, yeah, "Just give it to Walter and have him do a flyover. And if he flies over everybody, then it'll be a good thing."
They can't get him.
Mom was right. Mom, you're still right. If we don't have anybody that does flyovers anymore, all right, I got to take a break. Dave, thank you. You got to get up in about. You going to bed now? Is that how it works at the end of the house?
No. Are you kidding? I'm just sitting down for dinner, and then I'll read the paper, and then I'll get it.
Then he goes to bed. Thank you, Mr. Ennett.
See you guys.
WGN Radio Sports Director Dave Ennett. You'll hear him tomorrow morning with Steve Cochran and company. I'm going to pause here.
And he did have it correct, by the way. Great memory from Dave Ennett. Bob Evelini to Greg Latta, 37-yard touchdown pass in that Chiefs-Bears game. Boy, looked it up.
You think that they would have just... If I were the Chiefs, I would just go, you know what? You guys go ahead.
After the Walter run?
After that,
throw the towel.
We're just going to go now.
Forget it.
Clearly, we can't tackle you. And he didn't even have to do a flyover. Steve, Kevin, and then some calls. Walter Payton, remember story. What?
So I started my work with the Bears in 88, and he retired, I think, in 87. But he was still around in 88 in the locker room often, and I would do the post-game interviews with back then with Dick Butkus. And so we're live from, you know, you just stand in the locker room with a microphone, and Walter would, it happened two or three times, I'd be talking, doing an interview, and some guy would grab my rear end, goose me, and it was always Walter Payton. That's my connection.
How nice. How special. What a nice moment.
It was
for
fun.
The two of
you. Are
you
kidding me? It was a great story.
It was a locker room. Yeah. It's perfect. And I hear it. I guess that was his thing. He was a prankster.
He was a prankster.
It?
My dad managed an electronics store in the Northwest suburbs, and Walter Payton used to come early. As my dad was kind of getting the store ready to open it, my dad would open up the door for him a few minutes early and let Walter do some shopping and grab some things. And my dad has told me this story multiple times where he would always mess with my dad, where he would ask for the box on top of the top rack.
Right.
And my dad would get the ladder out, and he'd go and he'd pull it down, and he'd be sweating, and Walter would just look at the box. Nah, I don't like that one. Give me that one. And it was all good fun. He was just messing with my dad. But
the other thing is when I was the one who made the delivered the news on this radio station when he died, and it was a different time. We found out by fax. Would go check the fax machine, and I checked the fax and saw one coming in from the Chicago Bears, and it was the announcement that Walter Payton had died.
How about that? It's funny because the text, or you can text, and you can also go on my Facebook page. On my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John. We posted one of those highlight reels, and then you all are recollecting your favorite Walter Payton memory. Amanda Beal said, "I remember dancing to the Super Bowl Shuffle when I was 8 years old on VHS. Walter was my favorite on that video, and his little hip move that he did." Connie said there was a special on TV that showed how he worked out climbing hills. I also love watching him live in the game. We were lucky enough to sit at the 45-yard line each time. You know, I felt that way when Michael Jordan was playing, too. I remember somebody wrote a column, and they said, if you have the luxury of having good seats to a Walter Payton or a Michael Jordan game, you should give them to somebody else the same way people who had Babe Ruth tickets should have shared them with people so you could say, I saw the person that nobody will ever get to see the likes of again. John, I was on a plane coming from St. Louis to Chicago when he broke the rushing record. The pilot announced it over the PA and the whole plane cheered. And the town was really wrapped up in that. I don't remember what year that was. Ed, you're on WGN Radio. Jump in there. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
Hey, buddy, you're on the radio. What's up?
Oh, nothing much. How you doing?
What's your Walter Payton memory?
Okay. I believe it was his rookie year that he was at McCormick Place when they had the car show. And he was not selling so much as he was there to represent a certain automobile. And we had the opportunity to speak with him, get his autograph. My daughter got to kiss him. And he was such a very nice man and one hell of a football player.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. I mean, it's just a game, right? It's just a football game. Who cares? But Ditka had it right today. It was his heart. I mean, if an accountant was that, you know, you'd like to think that it wasn't just that he was entertaining us, but that he was doing so with all of his might, with all of his energy, with all of his commitment, and with a joy, too. Yeah, thanks for the phone call. Debbie said, John, I was at Jarrett's, that's, of course, his son's high school graduation, when he went up to get his diploma, Walter popped out on stage to give him a hug. He was so thin, and I thought to myself, he doesn't have much time left. So sad, but it was so nice to see him see his son graduate. I don't know that's... I didn't know that he did that. John, watch Hearts in Atlantis, based on this, really, if you want to feel really good about Bronco Nagurski. The Tribune wrote about him today. On Facebook, I'm WGN King John. The video's there of some of his greatest moments. Do you guys remember the scene, too? The scene, the play, where I think it was when he was doing one of his flyovers, and he landed like on his neck, like he was perpendicular to the ground, just on his head. Just landed on
right
his
on
neck.
Top of it.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, popped up, walked back to the huddle. And I like when he scored a touchdown, too. I'll sound real old here, but he didn't have an end zone dance, did he? He might have spiked the ball, but a lot of times he just flipped it back to the ref.
Or he gave it to the offensive lineman.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Why men great till they gotta be great? Thank you, Steve Bertrand. 2:38 on WGN. Best friend set me down in the salon chair. Shampoo press get you out of my hair. Fresh photos with the bar lighting. New man on the Minnesota Vikings. True hurts needed something more exciting. Bum, 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 bum. You tried to break my heart. Oh, that breaks my heart. What are you doing here, Ella?
I'm playing Lizzo. So this song, Truth Hurts, is number one on the Billboard Hot 100 today. And she's topping Shawn Mendes and Camila Cabello with Señorita, Billie Eilish with Bad Guy, and Taylor Swift with You Need to Calm Down.
No kidding. This is number one right now. Number two is Señorita.
Yep.
Which was Spotify's number one song of the summer, most streams, but this right now is upending that. It's different lists, but I get the point. You know what you should also play for us, producer Elf?
What?
Super Bowl Shuffle.
Okay.
Find it. Give me a thumbs up when you're ready to roll on that. We won't listen to the whole thing. It doesn't hold up real well. But if we're thinking about Walter Payton today, and the unveiling of the statue of him and George Halas at Soldier Field, then why not? We asked for some of your recollections on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Some of them are this simple. The stutter step, which is kind of what they're loading up. It looks like he's loading up in the statue. But his stutter step was amazing. I like how he would do that high kick when he would run, too. 630 said, how about Sweetness never running away from a defender when going out of bounds? He'd dish out the punishment before he went out of bounds. No kidding. And Mike sent in this, or posted this on my Facebook page. It was the Bears summer camp at Lake Forest College, maybe 1976 or 77. I was around 12 years old, and my dad and I would take a drive out there a couple of times a year to watch the Bears practice. The college kids there at Lake Forest would often ask the younger kids to help pass out buttons to the crowd. And I was lucky enough to be asked to help. We were a good distance from the practice field, from the sideline, that is. But I hear a rumble coming toward me, and here come number 35, Roland Harper, and number 65, Noah Jackson, and number 73, and others, and all come crashing out of bounds, and at the last second before I'm run over, Sweetness, good old number 34, Walter Payton, swooped me up. I remember thinking, he's not that big, but it felt like I was actually being grabbed by a real bear, powerfully strong, yet gentle. And then he started running with me under his arm like a football. Everyone had a laugh. I was in awe. I'm 55 today, and I remember it like it was yesterday. May God rest his soul. No kidding. So there's a story out of Houston today that somebody was, what, looking for a sandwich, right? A Popeye's chicken sandwich, is that right, Olive?
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody wanted one of them Popeye's chicken sandwiches, and they didn't have it. So what? So they left the baby in the car.
Yeah.
And a couple of gals and some guys go in there, and they didn't have any chicken sandwiches, and then they pulled out a gun.
Mm-hmm. But luckily, the employees had already locked the doors on them before they could come in.
So that's where that story is. They're still looking for these people. You can't do that. And I've had this question on my mind ever since this story broke. That is the fact that Popeye's has run out of chicken sandwiches. How hard is it to make a chicken sandwich? You got chicken, and you got some buns and some secret sauce. You got a chicken sandwich. I mean, literally, that's what it is. Now, I know it's not the same piece of chicken you get when you get a chicken thigh or breast over there, but it's they got chicken, and they got sandwiches. Make chicken sandwiches. How hard is this? I was thinking of my friend Kevin Molitor, who was in a really funny video that we made a couple of years ago on National Watermelon Day. And we posted it on Facebook. In fact, we've reposted it on my Facebook page. It shows how he is literally an award-winning fruit carver. And what he did with the watermelon for us is pretty hilarious and amazing. It's on the WGN King John Facebook page. But Kevin is also a chef and a food recipe creator for restaurants. Right now, he is the strategic business director of Innova Flavors in the Chicago area. And I asked Kevin to kind of give me some insight into this story. Hey, Kevin, it's John. You're back on the air. How are you, my friend?
How you doing, John? Doing great, thanks.
So what do you do for a living again?
I'm the strategic business unit director for Innova Flavors. We do customized flavorings, natural flavorings for food manufacturers. So I've been doing this about 30 years. And very, very familiar with rolling what they call LTOs, limited time only rollouts in the food industry. And it just, if you want, I was kind of, you know, you're saying they make chicken sandwiches. Why don't they just make a chicken sandwich? It is so extremely complex to create a supply chain for a new product rollout. If you look at Popeyes, they have about 3,100 stores in 25 countries. And they use everything that you have in the supply chain when you set this up has to be, they're usually pretty much custom made just for Popeyes in this case. And you have to remember that, you know, chicken is a natural product. So the process of forecasting goes all the way back to the farmers that are raising chickens. So like I said, the complexity of overestimating or underestimating raw material needs, it's a huge issue for major restaurant chains.
Yeah.
And you know, there's so many ingredients that go into this thing. I mean, they have to forecast for specialty brioche buns, special batter mix, which is a buttermilk made marinade, breading mixes, fresh chicken. So it is more complex than just saying grab some chicken and just kind of put it on a bun, because there's super, super tight specs that have to be done for every one of these products when they go into rollout.
So are chicken sandwiches like this, and I presume it's similar at other fast food or fast casual restaurants, are they made on site, or do they make all of these chicken patties in a warehouse in St. Louis and then ship them out and everybody gets them that way?
The answer is yes to both, you know, to both those. There's some chains that'll have, they're called further processed, you know, like pre-dusted, batter, breaded chicken that's par fried and then frozen and sold in, you know, a bag and a box, you know, that they can just take and put in the fryer. But in the case of Popeyes, they use fresh chicken in the restaurant. You know, they marinate the product for at least like 12 hours, and then they hand batter and bread the product on premise. So again, if you, you know, I think I read that Popeyes forecasted that they would have enough raw materials to run into September, and they ran out of it in like 2 weeks in August. It just the social media just blew this thing up, you know, and everybody just wanted to compare it against, you know, their competitors. So
who have you?
I just think they.
And evidently they got the recipe right. I mean, I don't know what I haven't had the sandwich yet. Wendy did. I don't know how I had the Chick-fil-A sandwich. I think that is the best damn food I've ever had. And I don't like crispy chicken. I like the soft kind of softer chew. But whatever. Evidently they got the recipe right on this. Did you try the Popeyes chicken sandwich?
No, it was gone before I could get over to try it.
Did you go in with a gun and shoot the place up because you couldn't get it?
No. I don't want it that bad.
What have you done that I have tasted, or where have you worked that I've gone?
You know, usually we try to keep, you know, the customer base that we work with kind of private. But, you know, just like I've done product development with, you know, every of the top, you know, pizza chains, all the top QSR burger chains, you know, the largest Italian chain, largest seafood chains. You know, my background's always been seasoning blends and flavors. So, you know, we're a component that is either added at the restaurant level or added in the manufacturing site that puts the whole product together that sells it to the end chain. So, you know, we're like just, you know, a piece of the whole finished product.
Okay, well, you told me off the air, so but you don't want to say on the air, and I'll respect that. But I have the list of restaurants you've developed recipes for, and every one of them are major American household names. We know these are the big players, and you've been doing the seasonings and things like that for them. And coming up with the flavor recipes, I wonder if they know in advance, like, if it was this good, how did they not know that people just weren't going to lose their minds about it?
Well, you have R&D, research folks that, obviously studied Chick-fil-A very, very intensely to find out, to get something that would be better or at least on par with their sandwich. And so there's a ton of research that goes into that up front. The issue with this particular launch is their procurement team really didn't have any bar to measure against as far as what they think the launch would do, because they've never done a chicken sandwich before. So I think they were just overwhelmed by it as well. And then plus the you could not ask for better marketing.
Well, isn't that an interesting point? Do you think this is legitimate?
I'm just speculating, but I think it is. Because me personally, if I was running a chain, why would I want to stop that massive amount of sales?
We called the restaurants in the area. Elif and I were on the phone with various Popeye's franchises, and they're all franchises. It's not company-owned stores. So we were on the phone with various stores in the Chicago area, and they said, if you're coming for a chicken sandwich, wait 2 or 3 weeks. The one store I talked to in the city, for instance, said they had the last chicken sandwich they sold was last Friday, and they don't think they're going to get any more for 2 or 3 weeks. Now, maybe it's good for business because Popeye's is still on top of mind. People want to try their chicken, and even if you can't get a sandwich, maybe you're inclined to swing by now. But you're right. That's an interesting point. I'm not going to go there unless they have this damn sandwich, and there's no point going there right now because they said it's going to be 2 or 3 weeks.
Right. Well, if you look at it again, like you mentioned, it's not just chicken. It's not just a brioche bun or the sauce or the pickles. It's all of those things, and all of those have been customized and spec'd for Popeyes. So, they've got to, fill the bakery plant back up and get time in there to run production on that. They've got to have the chicken, processed, and, they've got to get new orders of, batter and breading, marinade, et cetera. So, it goes all the way down the line backwards that they have to get all that, together first before they can relaunch this.
Maybe this will work to their advantage in the long run in that the same way, follow me now, you loved Game of Thrones, and you would wait a year and a half for the next episode. And when the next episode came up, you were just so jazzed for it. So maybe telling everybody, no, you got to wait 3 weeks, is just going to create a whole second insane wave of people trampling over each other trying to get at it,
It'll happen.
By the way, Deb wanted to say something. You're on WGN Radio. Hi, Deb. You're on the air.
Hi. There's actually a Tennessee man that's filed a $5,000 lawsuit against Popeyes for deceptive practices and emotional distress.
Emotional distress, mind you.
He said he wasted so much time running from Popeyes to Popeyes, and he was also scammed on Craigslist. He tried to buy one for $24.
$24. Oh, that's funny. Wow, that's great. Thanks for the phone call, Deb. Have a good day. John, we went to Popeyes. We went to Popeyes the first time for chicken. Guess what? They were out of chicken. John, if they're out of chicken sandwiches, why do they still have that commercial on TV? I don't know the answer to that. Are they still running it? Henry said, John, do you like the Chick-fil-A sandwiches takes the position on LGBTQ issues? I don't like that. But boy, it's a good sandwich. It's 2:51 on WGN. If you've tried one of those, I'd be interested in your quick review here, please. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. If you've tried one of the Popeye's chicken sandwiches, really? Is this worth the wait? Do you remember, what was the donut chain that everybody just lost their minds for?
Krispy Kreme.
Krispy Kreme. What did you think of that? That was a pretty good product, wasn't it?
Oh, the one that opened up in Woodridge, they had police directing traffic into it. It's crazy.
Yeah, think about that. Kevin Molitor is a food specialist. When I called him earlier today, you can tell he's calling from his kitchen now. He comes up with recipes for major food chains that you have tried and are still eating at these days. And I asked him to give us some insight into the business. 312-981-7200. Talk to Patrick. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air. How good or good bad was it?
Very disappointing. I like the spicy chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A also. So basically, the Popeye spicy chicken sandwich is a plain breaded chicken sandwich with spicy sauce on it.
You were disappointed. Patrick, thank you for the phone call. How about Ron? You tried it. What did you think?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Ron.
Oh, hey, hi, John. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I live over in Michigan City, and I called there on Friday, and they had to get some in and so on and so forth. But I tried the sandwich. I was not all that impressed with it.
I wonder, thanks for the phone call. If there's, you know, it's now we've oversold it. It's like when everybody says it's a great TV show or movie, it can never live up to the hype. Mike, you're on the air. What did you think?
Yeah, hi, John. My wife and I, we've had those a couple of times. We get them in Buffalo Grove. At least they used to have them in Buffalo Grove. I haven't been there for about a month. But we just thought they were okay. I'd give it about maybe a 6 or 7 out of a 10. They put mayonnaise on it, which I don't really like.
Ah.
And my favorite, I don't like Chick-fil-A either, but my favorite is Wendy's. I think they have the best chicken and spicy chicken sandwich around.
Thanks for the phone call. I was thinking we'd get Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, McDonald's. They do a chicken sandwich. Whoever's got them out there, line them all up. Elif will have to do all the work on this. We'll have them in here. They'll be nice and hot, and then we'll try them. We did this with the best hamburgers in the city of Chicago with the Tribune a couple of months ago. Problem is we can't get the sandwich. We can't compare it until for another few weeks maybe. Okay, thanks for the calls, everybody. Any last comments or observations from you, Mr. Smart Food Guy, Kevin Molitor?
I just, you know, it just stuns me when most people just, you know, think that food just shows up. You know, it's such a complicated process to make this happen, you know, and do it seamlessly. So I honestly, in my heart, believe that this was just a great underestimation of how popular this thing would take off due to social media. I mean, it just blasts everywhere, and everybody just runs to get these things. So I just find it incredible, and you just cannot imagine the volume that goes through these chains. I mean, I did one on a pizza that was selling 400,000 pizzas a month. It's incredible numbers. So I just think they just got caught short on this.
Right,
and,
You walk into a store and you go, wait, why don't you have a chicken sandwich? And they say, you don't understand. We needed to make 7.3 million to be distributed across the world last Tuesday, and they just couldn't keep up. So I can see how, if you think about it as a corporate level, if you don't have the product to meet the demand, it's not the local guy's problem. Okay, at least not to fix. It's 2:58. I'm out of time. Kevin, let's visit with you in the studio sometime again. Thanks for saying hi.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Take care. You betcha. Kevin Molitor. Guys, apologies. I went long on the show today. You get talking about chicken sandwiches, and the next thing you know, you're eating up Rose Showtime. How are you guys? No, I don't even hear him over there.
Hi, John.
There you are. Hi there.
Happy day after Labor Day. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah, likewise. You have a good 3-day break?
I did, yeah. Out in New Buffalo with the big, fat Greek and Italian families, and, you know, we cooked and ate.
Can I tell you
we're good at that.
Phenomenon that happened to me? So Brenda and I and our kids went up to my brother's in-law's place in Estes Park, Colorado, up in the mountains.
Oh. Nice.
If I walk 5 steps, I'm out of breath.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only like 8,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
8,000 is a big number,
I guess,
John.
So. I had
that's
no
a
idea.
Big number.
I was like, we were playing wiffle ball. I was out on my knees.
And then you see the people who live there just kind of whisking by,
right.
Running,
it also made
biking.
Me appreciate when mountain climb, like the people on Mount Everest, and you go, why don't you just keep going? It's like, well, it takes a lot of breath to make one step.
Yeah, that's why you got to have the oxygen. That's why the Sherpas run up with the oxygen tanks for the white guys who are at the top of the mountain. That's why the Sherpas are up there. All right, we'll go. I forgot something. You know, I dropped my Rolex on top of the mountain. Can you go get it? Tensing. And the next thing you know, just running up there.
There he goes.
Yeah.
Shoots up there.
It's crazy. I mean, that wasn't that high. I guess that is kind of high. But
it's kind of high, yeah.
You think I'm in good shape. I can't walk 10 steps.
Man, I'll tell you, that's right.
I'm
that's
the same.
A lot of that. Like, Denver's at 5,000. In Denver, I'm like, whoo, I get off the airplane. I'm like, my hands, all right, I got it.
I know, it's the heavy breathing.
Right. I'm spitting on the carpet. I got it. Okay.
How do teams on the road when they just fly into Denver?
See, that's tough.
Good question.
That should be a big home field advantage. Well, you know, with a big Olympic training center is in Colorado Springs for exactly that reason.
Yeah, right. If you can do well with thin air, imagine with full boat of oxygen.
Exactly the idea.
So I'll get out of your way, but you want to promo your show now? Or
We got another alderman. Brendan Riley is going to join us. It's Tuesdays with Brendan, and he's going to tell us whether or not Lori Lightfoot's going to get her way here in the taxes. But also, Lori Lightfoot taking Ted Cruz out.
Can you believe it? The smackdown. She was not letting him just use the violence here in the city.
You get our name out of your mouth. That is such a street-ish kind of way of saying something. It's sort of like, okay, I guess I will. I'm sorry. I'm
he
very,
didn't
very
respond.
Sorry.
Yeah. Instead, he's picking a fight with Alyssa Milano now. So
right, because he thinks he can take Alyssa Milano. I don't think he thinks he can take Lori Lightfoot.
I was surprised the president took on Deborah Messing over the holiday weekend too. I'm like, what was that all about?
That
Twitter
more stats. Than 100 tweets from the president this weekend.
Yeah, he was busy. All right, goodbye.
Bye.